Welcome to 60 Scales and the Truth, a podcast where amazing guitar players reflect on their lives and on how they got where they are today. My name is Niels Kunz. I'm a journalist, podcast maker, and a guitar fanatic. Thanks for tuning in. My guest today is born in Sydney, formerly known or unknown as Halcyon, a guitarist of whose Steve Vai said he made the finest forward-thinking melodic rhythmically and harmonically instrumental guitar records I've ever heard. Did he also say you're really nice and all, or?
I think I had met him when he said that. Okay. I met him once very briefly, but I feel like he would come away from every interaction saying that person was nice. I don't think he has any like ability to dislike things. I probably does. I need to get to know him better.
It's maybe the same kind of question I asked to Matteo Mancuso, my previous guest, who I asked, what do you do with a compliment like that, mm-hmm. right? Because it feels nice, I suppose, but yeah. It gives some pressure perhaps as well, right?
I guess so. I guess the first thing I did was put it in every piece of press and bio that I could. Yeah. I was like, this has fucking made my life.
Yeah.
And you're still using it. So it worked.
Yeah, right.
In terms of, I felt that it was more like encouragement than pressure. Just if I was doing something that I really liked, that I found really fun, and it was discovered by Steve Vai, and he thought it was cool too, that to me was like encouragement that my taste and interest is worth following rather than pressure. Because I guess when I started making music, it wasn't out of any sort of pressure. And I try to keep pressure out of the room as much as possible.
That's actually interesting because I heard you say sometimes like, I'm a bit lazy and I don't like to, well, pressure. You try to keep that out.
Yeah.
How did that grow with you in your, because that's your whole personality then, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. I think I found at some point in high school and in university as well, some of the people around me would get very caught up in like the things that you need to do or are meant to do and the stress and pressure that comes with doing them to a certain standard or not doing them. And at some point I kind of had my own idea of what I thought was important and what wasn't. And when I did a bad job of something I didn't care about, I just didn't mind that much. Like mm-hmm. a teacher saying, you failed. I'd be like, yeah, it's because I didn't do it. It's mm-hmm. like, it makes sense. I didn't put any effort into this and the result was not good. It's like, mm-hmm. that just seems like it makes sense.
But you said like in high school that kind of grew that mentality?
Yeah. I'm not sure why. Maybe that's just how I am as a person.
The way you come across to me is like, this guy has no intergenerational trauma whatsoever.
Maybe I'm yet to discover it. But yeah. I mean, my parents are awesome. I had a great childhood. Mm-hmm. So that probably would have contributed to it a lot.
So is that then also like a deliberate way of being then? Like you said, I kind of decided like,
I think it becomes more and more deliberate, like the more you grow up, because mm-hmm. You just come in contact with more and more people who try to tell you what to do or try to tell you what is the way to do something. And I like to think that no one really knows what they're doing. So there's no reason, like if someone says you need to make an album every year or something, it's like, well, what do you really know? Mm-hmm. And I could be wrong too, but it doesn't really matter, mm-hmm. I guess.
So a short clip of Jacob Collier saying something about like that, the same thing, like he wished he knew earlier that nobody really knows what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of things that have worked before. Like I was talking to someone about this recently, like why is an album the length that it is? And like, why are bands still making albums? And I don't have an answer. Maybe you do. It's like, it feels like 42 minutes to an hour of music is like a nice amount. Like you get to experience enough things that it feels satisfying, but it's not so much that you like, don't get distracted. But I don't know. Like, why is that the amount of music that happens?
They made that up some time ago also, right? Because I thought maybe because a soccer match is also 45 minutes. Yeah. So I thought maybe it has something to do with the attention span people have or something. Yeah. But that doesn't make sense either, right? Because if the music, there can be so many varieties. And nowadays it's different than in the 70s, I suppose, because you have get a message.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I saw recently something that's becoming popular somewhere in the world. I forget where, is movies that are delivered by 1 minute segments, and they're like really bad. They're like daytime TV quality, like romance drama, but you get one minute episode, and then I think you have to pay for the rest. So it's like a 90 minute movie, but in like TikTok format.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's the way music will go too. We'll have an album that's 300 songs, but it's like 10 seconds each.
Another guest in the series, Reinier Baas, he's a Dutch jazz player.
Mm-hmm.
But that was more from the point of view that he wanted to make himself restrictions while composing. And he said, I'll make 60-second songs.
Hmm.
So I have to make my point in 60 seconds. But that's not about, this is probably about marketing, right? And what the audience wants. And I guess that didn't have anything to do with that, but.
Yeah. I would be interested what the result of that restriction would be.
I'll let you hear. He's a very interesting player.
Yeah.
And because he says restrictions can help you.
Yeah.
He said.
That would definitely help me, because the way I write music is I usually write about 60 seconds and then give up. And then that's where the real work goes in, is trying to take a 60-second idea and make it a song.
Mm.
But if I could stop at 60 and consider that the plan, that would be great. I'd love to do that.
Is that laziness or is your mind going everywhere? Or because you cannot be lazy if you go on tour and you record and you compose, right?
Yeah. No, I don't think it's laziness, but I think 30 to 60 seconds, the same way an album is the length that it is. I feel like for the tempos that most of the music I listen to are, it's probably 16 bars or 32 bars. It's like a chunk that's just like enough to have an idea.
Mm.
And then making it like adding the other 3 minutes or like the other 10 minutes is like the next hard bit, I guess.
But Matteo Mancuso, he said like he has people around him in that process. You are known to be a bedroom composer, right? So is it a solitary process with you?
Yeah, definitely. As of the last year, I've done 3 collaborations with other people, which we filmed as like a writing a song in a day thing.
Mm-hmm.
The third one's not out yet, but it'll be out sometime soon. And so that's more or less the first time I've written with someone else.
How was that for you?
It was very fun. It's not the process that I think I prefer.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think the nature of the music that I like is that every bit of it is pretty difficult, at least for me. So a time limit is always going to be a bad thing. Like if someone else comes up with a chord progression, but the goal is to have finished the song in like 6 hours, I would rather spend the whole day playing with the chord progression, even if like only one note changes by the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you would have more than a day in a band, but even then there's still, as soon as you have 2 people with lives where you need to find like what is the crossover time to make music together, I feel like you would start restricting the process a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But then also there's plenty of people that have found like collaborators where they make magic, and it's probably quicker and better. But it was really fun, but it felt like a different thing. I like having infinite time basically to explore.
So can you tell me something about, the bedroom has changed probably, right?
The bedroom has changed in location and it's changed in quality. It's currently taken not a downgrade, but it's taken a sideways move. I've been staying in LA with my girlfriend lately, and my studio setup at the moment is like a poker table. So it's like got the place for all the cards to go and like drinks holders. And then I've set up a laptop on it with 2 little speakers and a little interface.
That's all you need.
Which is all I need. And actually it made me really happy to compress my setup into just a laptop and little speakers.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause now I feel like I can make music more or less anywhere. Whereas in the past it was like, I need to go home I need to go to this place 'cause this is where my guitars are and the big speakers and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But about that bedroom, we'll go back a little bit to the Halcyon days.
Yeah.
That was still at your parents' place, I suppose?
That was like all growing up, and then through university, the bedroom, the setup didn't change much until I moved out of where I was living in Sydney at the start of the year. I had the same desk that I had through high school. So it's like a 15-year-old, like $20 IKEA desk.
Mm-hmm.
So that never changed. I think I had two sets of monitors in the last 10 years or something like that. And yeah, it was just a room with speakers. I'd got like acoustic panels for the first time like 3 years ago.
Oh, your neighbors were happy.
Yeah. Not even like to absorb the sound, but just to stop the reflections off the wall. So I could hear a little better. But then I fade, like I used to mix all my own music. Back then I was mixing everything until basically the Handmade Cities album. And then since then I phased myself out of it. So even then I don't really need a room to sound that good. Mm. As long as I can kind of hear what I'm doing, it's fine.
So, tell me if you're into that bedroom zone, right? You say I prefer if it's to spend 6 hours or maybe on one note even, but, can you tell me something about that whole process of writing something?
Which part?
Well, maybe, I said, let's go back to the Halcyon days. Maybe when you started out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. When I first started out, one of the things that inspired me to record music was Misha Mansour from Periphery. Periphery hadn't put out an album yet, but they had some songs and he was releasing music like under his own name. And that, I think, was the first time that I heard someone make all the sounds themselves and with like affordable equipment. So I used to, as I would get like different bits of software, I would try and make like a 1 minute piece using like a new guitar amp plugin or a new reverb or a new like drum sample or something like that. So I started just copying songs that I knew or writing stuff that was really similar to get to know the different software and the different sounds that I could make. And then eventually that turned into like, I want to make my own songs. And then I would usually copy like the structure of a Dream Theater song or something like that. And take my like 30-second idea and see like, how can I turn that into a 5 or 6 minute like Dream Theater style song or Periphery style song. Mm-hmm. And that's basically the stuff that's on that Halcyon release is like these demos as I was getting to know, like recording and mixing.
Mm-hmm. That Facebook still online, I scrolled through it.
I think I still have access to it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I saw what struck me is like, there's this, well, you were a kid, right?
Yeah.
Was super happy with new software, right? The user wrote something like, oh, the new Logic came out. Life is beautiful.
Yeah.
Something like that. And also what also struck me like that there was such a big variety of musicians you listened to and were really like, I saw you mention the Rosenberg Trio, for instance.
I don't even know. So I was looking at your notes to try and like get an idea of what the band is.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I saw that and I was like, I have no idea who that is.
No, really?
Yeah.
I find that's interesting.
Which is probably the case for a lot of music I've listened to over the years.
Oh, really? Because the thing I think you wrote is like, you'll be pressed hard to find something I haven't seen of these guys.
Who is?
Rosenberg Trio, jazz, this gypsy jazz, Django Reinhardt kind of style.
Oh, so is Sylvain Luc, Borelli, Legrine, and someone else?
No, it's they're all called Rosenberg.
Oh. I see. I just vaguely remember. This makes sense. The guitarist in my band, Jake, would have showed me that whole world of guitar. And I probably just went deep into a YouTube rabbit hole and watched every single thing I could find and then have totally forgotten about it.
But that's actually interesting because I thought this guy will dive into anything, which you probably did. But because these guys live not that far from where I live. So I was like, right. They're really great. They're doing this Django Reinhardt gypsy jazz kind of thing. And I was like, oh, is he into that as well? But were you into basically anything that was interesting?
Yeah, I love that. I still do. Me and Jake, my guitarist, have a joke that when we get older, we're going to like move to Italy or something and just learn gypsy jazz properly.
Yeah.
And just like sit on a porch and jam.
You'll have to start when you're -1, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. We play slow.
Yeah. Yeah. But then it's not the real thing, right? Yeah. You can speed it up as well.
Still like arthritis.
Yeah. You learned how to make it sound okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. But it's true that you were back then absorbing a lot of influences, right?
Yeah.
And your father was a was or is a teacher at the conservatory, right? Gary is his name.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I also listened to his music and like, he's a decent double bass player.
Yeah.
Why didn't you choose to go to conservatory? I was wondering.
I never really wanted a career in music. I don't really remember. But it just didn't seem like something I wanted to pursue as something that would become a job, like doing weddings or doing stuff in restaurants or whatever. Just having like playing music as a job wasn't something that I thought I wanted to do.
So your idea was like a conservatory is that career path? So
yeah, I didn't see that it would necessarily make like making music for fun any better. Mm-hmm. It might have also been the result of high school. The high school I went to, you could choose between like contemporary music or classical. And I think in the year that I finished high school, there were like 20 people who did classical and I was the only person who did contemporary.
Mm.
So I kind of self-taught that subject. And that probably also added to it as being like music is something that is fun and that I just learn myself. Like going and spending money to learn it in a school doesn't seem to like necessarily add anything to what I want out of music.
I guess for a lot of musicians, it's a way to focus, right, on an instrument. But you had that focus in a different way already then, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah.
So then architecture?
Yeah, so I still, when I finished high school, I was like, I should do something with my life. And my sister was studying architecture at the time.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, yeah, that looks good. I'll do that. Because it seemed like the right combination of creative, but also you can get a job and make money if that is what you want. So, yeah, it was like it seemed like a safer creative thing to pursue than music.
What did your parents say when you said, I'm going to do what my sister's doing?
I don't remember.
No?
No, I don't remember. But, I mean, my parents are always supportive and encouraging of anything. I wonder, like, because I never did anything particularly bad.
Mm.
I was like, pretty good in school and everything. I wonder what they would be like if I was bad. But like the combination of them being chill and supportive and me being chill and doing fine just seemed like a just gentle nudge in the right direction, which was nice.
It's interesting that most of the guests say the role of the parents is quite important, right? To be able to actually, whether it be conservatory or in another way, choose to be a musician. There was one guest who said, my parents said I couldn't do it. So I was like, I'm going to show you guys.
Yeah.
That's
Well, I guess the other thing is my dad being a musician and my mom being a huge music lover, I guess it was never a question of like them not seeing music as a real thing. Like there's a huge value in music. So I guess my interest in it was a positive thing. It wasn't like you better not do that. Like that's fucked up.
Mm.
So, yeah.
So then good. Architecture, how many years did you spend there on the university?
Did a master's degree.
Ah, you finished it. Okay.
Yeah.
So is there any, are you still active in a way in that part? Because if you've learned so much about that, it can't be out of your life completely, right? Or is that?
No, I mean, it's something that I enjoy when I'm traveling, like trying to find, like this interview is now keeping me from going and seeing, I forget what it's called, it's like a whole Zaha Hadid designed area near the water, which I'm going to go after this.
Yeah, it's not that far. Yeah. I know where it is.
And it's something that I'm still interested in. And I guess sort of like music, because I spent that time like learning about it and focused on it, my taste has become sort of specific, where I'm not very easily impressed. Mm-hmm. The same way with like, it kind of gets harder and harder to find new music that's really exciting, like really new. It's the same with architecture.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's something I'm still interested in.
Well, when was the last time when that did happen though with music that you were like, oh, I have to admit this happened with when I listened to your music.
Mm, thank you.
I was like, whoa, this is a new world. I haven't heard something like this.
Yeah. So,
but that's when cool. Did that happen last time with you?
I don't remember. It can't have been too long ago. Let me see what I've been listening to. It happens like frequently enough. It happens probably every week.
You say that it hardly happens.
or at least, but usually just like one chord or one sound or like one little thing. I mean, you probably know Tigran Hamasyan, the piano player. He's got a couple of new songs out that do that all the time. I have a friend named Josh Della Victoria, a guitarist. I don't know if you know him.
No.
He has a project called Victoria with Matt Gasker, the drummer in Animals as Leaders.
Oh, yeah.
And the stuff, not just because they're both insane, like Josh is mental in a good way. Like the things that he can do on a guitar and mathematically are crazy, but they together seem to write music that also comes across with a lot of feeling. One of the, not the most recent song, but like two songs ago or whatever, is one of the most, I don't know how to describe it, but like listening to it felt like listening to an emotional piece of music, which is pretty rare in this instrumental world. Like, at least for me, normally there's some level of excitement you get out of hearing someone do something insane or, surprise or something by hearing a chord change or a sound or something, but it's rare that it's kind of like you get that proper emotional hit from it. But this song did that for me, while it's also in like some time signature I don't understand and he's like selected picking and shit. It's really cool.
Is that the thing you're searching for as a composer as well, right? Because there's that emotional aspect when you improvise. I can imagine, I talk with Julian Lodge, for instance, who on stage he improvises and it's all about feeling and emotion and being present and letting the moment dictate what happens, right? I can imagine with your kind of music, that's a different way to approach and searching for that emotion, right? Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, that's definitely the main focus for me. It's hard to elaborate on because it's, I find it so hard to create. It's not a very, it's not something that I know how to recreate using like logic or musical techniques or devices. I feel like that's the thing that you come across accidentally when you're writing a piece of music, is like a certain chord change in the context of the rest of the song. Just feels a certain way, like, or it could be going from one guitar tone to another, just, and it's not like you can repeat that, like going from a clean sound to a distorted sound isn't always going to sound as something as it does, you know, as it did in like that moment. But I think that's the main point for me in writing music, is trying to discover those things and then just like explore them as best as possible within that song. Sorry, that's a pretty vague answer.
No, but one of your albums called Impulse Voices, right? It hits that subject as well, right? To open up for impulse, right? And like the thing you're not going to do if you think about it.
Yeah, that's like, but
I read an interview with you in Rolling Stone India or something. I read it right after my 4-year-old peed all over the bedroom. I was like,
but that's like,
that's a childish impulse, you know?
Like, yeah. There's actually something from when I was studying architecture that really stuck with me. I had a teacher who was like a pretty eccentric guy, which isn't that relevant, but he was bringing in like very interesting ideas all the time. And once he was just talking about how he took his kid to a museum or something. And like for adults, we're just like, there's the building, I'm going to walk into it, look at stuff and then leave. But his kid found this like little ramped thing and like climbed off it and was like on the edge of hurting himself basically by like engaging with the environment in a way that adults stop thinking about as being interesting. And so when I was doing design, like in that period, I was always thinking like, what would a kid do in this space? Or like, how could you make an adult want to do something other than just like walk to the door and walk out of the door?
Yeah. Or a toilet, pee into it.
Yeah.
What happens if I'm going to do the opposite?
Maybe you don't want to encourage a child to like piss everywhere. But I guess the good thing about music is there is no physical cleanup. So you kind of, it's fun maybe to explore like, what is it like to do the musical equivalent of like piss on the floor?
Yeah, maybe that concept of this is made to do this, but what happens if I'll do...
What if you don't? Yeah.
So is that the way you try to approach while composing? Because maybe I should rephrase that question. how do you incorporate mistakes, for instance, in your compositions?
More and more, yeah. Because I guess when I was starting, one of my big focuses was trying to get everything to sound as tight as possible, because that's like a whole difficult skill in itself, is like just simply playing the guitar in time and then playing left and right in time together so it sounds tight, and then editing it and like having the drums follow the guitar and all that. And then once I guess I got more comfortable with that, I started thinking about like ways to piss on the floor of that idea and like what's it like if the guitar tone's not like a straightforward metal guitar tone, what if it's like fuzzier or lower gain or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then playing around with different things that are not what I would typically do, or like what's not in my current skill set. And there was a time, I guess, just after Handmade Cities, when I was making the Sunhead EP, and this idea has stuck with me since, was like moving some of the power away from the guitar and into the bass. Like my bass player Simon's got this crazy thick tone. Mm-hmm. So a lot of guitar parts become like, most of the sound is coming from the bass, and the guitar is more like a thin single coil sound over the top. So it doesn't sound like a metal band necessarily. And so just continually trying to play around with like how to achieve those feelings of like a big riff, but without necessarily using the same sounds over and over again. And then the same thing with harmony, like I've explored Lydian like to the, as far as at least I know what to do with it. So it's nice to try and think like maybe I could add one more chord before I go back to Lydian.
Yeah, is that your go-to skill?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It feels nice to play.
It does. Yeah, exactly.
So, but let me think. The question was, how do you approach mistakes? And what was the answer?
I guess the answer, yeah. I guess because I don't have a super deep harmonic knowledge, some of the chord progressions I come up with are mistakes or just unintentional. Same with lead playing, not necessarily mistakes, but improvising. Like I'm not a great improviser, but I improvise in order to write. And so a lot of the stuff that I come up with that sounds interesting to me was a mistake, because it wasn't just a pattern that I know. And then that might inform like changing everything in the song to match that. Like if I played a wrong note, it might be like, actually, I want to keep that wrong note and change the chord to make it sound like it was right.
It's interesting. I saw a little teaser of a She Happens clinic you did, and somebody asked you like, okay, are you a composer or a guitarist or something? And you're kind of reflecting like, oh, does guitar dictate what I'm composing, or should I get more distance from it? But this seems to me that the guitar is also giving you melodies, right?
Yeah.
You want that you won't make up in your head.
Yeah.
That will only happen if you have the instrument in your hand, right?
Yeah, and I think it's the same for all instruments. Like with writing a melody, for instance, it's fun to try and do on a keyboard or with a sound that's like covered in reverb, because it forces you to play something really simple. Whereas maybe on a guitar, you just reach for the stuff that you're used to, which might be faster, because it doesn't always sound good to play like three notes on a guitar. So I think moving between instruments or between sounds is a fun way to, I guess, encourage mistakes. So you come across stuff that isn't as like on the tip of your tongue.
So what do you do to keep your head fresh as a composer?
Listen to a lot of different music, take a lot of breaks. Like I haven't really written anything. I've written some ideas and a few like standalone songs, but I haven't really spent a lot of time writing music since I finished the Mirage EP, which was, I finished the writing in like 2021. So it's like 3 years ago. So.
And now you had these kind of Tinder dates with, Rabea Massad and, who else were it? Kiko.
Yeah.
And, Mateus.
Yeah. So that's fun. And I see that as a different thing. That feels less like the serious composing thing that is my, like, the thing that I like the most, I guess. But then right now we're on tour, so I'm not going to do anything. And then we're on tour again, so I'm not going to do a thing. And then we're on tour again. So to me, this year's finished. And so I'm just going to enjoy it basically for all the stuff that's already planned. And then next year you get into writing.
Can imagine that way you're also quite hungry when you go back at it, right?
Yeah, it's like very, very pent up.
Mm.
Yeah, which is a nice feeling to have.
And I guess you absorb the world as well then, right? And put it back in your music. So you want to see the Antwerp, the architecture here in,
yeah, exactly.
in Antwerp. Hey, a returning theme is a question from one guitar player to the next. Mm-hmm. You're the last player in the season, so you won't have to make anything up for... Although the first in the next season is Richard Henschel, so maybe if something comes up, you might ask him something.
Okay.
But Matteo Mancuso, he asked you...
Well, yeah. How do you produce your music? Because it sounds incredibly good. And Pliny is one of the guys I followed his one of his master classes when I was at the Guitar Summit last year, and it's like a guitar convention they do once a year in Germany,
yeah, Mannheim, right?
Mannheim, yeah, that's right. And he said something about composing his own stuff that is very appealing to me, because I always compose my own stuff with the people around me. Like, okay, I have this idea and I have this riff that I composed. Maybe I have a little demo before, but it's just like drums and guitars and that's it. There's nothing like fancy about it. And Pliny is more structured on this side of things. And because his albums are sounding incredibly good, I like the mix, I like the guitar tone. I wanted to know more about this kind of stuff.
I think there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. What I like, or what I try to put into my productions, is all the stuff that I like in other people's productions. So it's not like there's any secret or anything new or different. I think one thing that's really important is that the other musicians are insanely good, which I know has, because his band is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then recording them to like the highest quality you can. So Simon, my bass player, plays the bass, also engineers the drums and mixes everything. So that's a lot of like the difference between a song that I write before he's touched it and after is, I don't know what to quantify it as, but it's at least like half of the magic to me in the end result.
So he's your McCartney or your Liz Lennon, like, or the other way around, perhaps?
Yeah, in terms of like making all the guitars just sound sick and making the drum sound sick and the bass playing and the bass parts. And then my drummer Chris also has ideas that I would never think of to do with the drums. So it's like having all these things that are adding to the idea that make it more magical. And then I guess in terms of the production, like with the other sounds and layers and all that sort of stuff, that's like a catalog of things that I've stolen from other songs, like just over the entire course of my listening to music.
Mm-hmm.
Like layering a melody with other instruments like bells and violins and all that stuff. It's like I heard it in a song once and it sounded interesting. So now when I write a melody, I think like, oh, what could I add to this? And there's like certain things that I do all the time, and then sometimes I try something else as well.
Mm-hmm.
Or getting to a part in a song and then thinking like, what would I normally do? And then trying to think what's the opposite of that to make it new and exciting.
But it's interesting. In one point, it's a solitary process, you say, the composing, but at the other hand, to make it sound like Pliny, as people know how you sound, you need Simon, basically.
Or not. It definitely makes it better. I mean, I think it would still sound like me regardless of the other people involved, but I think what I find exciting at this point is writing a song to like the extent that I want to, and then working with Simon and Chris to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I mean, I could do that with any, like lots of different musicians, and probably still be excited with the result, but it happens that it's them for me.
But they've been longtime friends as well, right?
Yeah, and that's something that I really like and that I think is important and continues to get more important, is I like the idea of like long creative collaborations, because I think you just get, like, the communication keeps getting better. As long as you're working with people who are also pushing themselves, I mean, you would probably find this in like a sport team or like a business or anything. Like, if everyone is individually growing and then you're getting better at collaborating, it's like you can't really do that with someone new. So, yeah.
That's it. So about that pushing yourself, that seems to be the opposite of you. Like, oh, anything goes. And I'm a bit lazy.
Yeah.
But so deep inside, there is this motor, so to say.
Yeah.
To achieve.
I think I was talking about this with one of my oldest friends who's not in music, but we both have really similar taste in like the things we enjoy doing. And we kind of concluded that we want the absolute best possible imaginable thing at all times, but like the shortest route to get there. Yeah. So, I mean, I want to write music that's like nothing else I've ever heard before and like with stunning instrumentation and everything. But like I'll put in the bare minimum. And the bare minimum is a lot. Like it's a, I guess it's like a lifelong amount of effort. But I guess also recognizing like doing 6 hours of practicing a scale for me is not going to make the song better. So I can skip that. Or maybe it would, and maybe I'm copping out. But that's what I tell myself.
But in a way, that whole concept of shortcuts or the bare minimum. I think there's not really a bare minimum, like you said, right? I mean, there is a lot of effort.
I think the bare minimum to achieve a really high standard is a lot of work. It's just that there's always people who will do more work and then with varying results.
Yeah, but maybe to keep it a long-term thing, you need to be relaxed.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Hey, maybe is there something you'd like to ask Richard Henschel or?
Nothing that is politically correct. I'm going to see him in like 2 weeks. We do two shows with Haken, one in Uppsala in Sweden, which is where Strandberg's from.
Yeah.
And one in Milan a couple of days later. What would I like to ask him? How specific should it be? My question for Richard is, what does he do after, I think, at least 20 years of like a public career? And now he's putting out solo music, which is really different and interesting too. What does he do to stay inspired and creative while being really busy? And also, I guess, the like pressure to have a band move forward without like being too different because you get known for something. What does he do?
Answer be to that same question?
Well, I haven't done it for that long yet. I don't have as many albums as Haken. I would have to assume or maybe guess that they have a similar level of like, they have their interests and what they like to do, but they're willing to do something different that might not be liked in order to be inspired or have fun still. I think there might be an element of that. And just like following what interests you at maybe the expense of security. I don't know. We'll find out on season 2 or 3 or 4.
Yeah, whatever. As long as it's fun. So in the next album, you're going to sound like the Rosenberg Trio.
I guess that's something that I haven't mentioned, but I think is a part of the production is that I have a very broad taste in music and I love appreciating stuff that I have no idea how to do, but I do have a very like hard limit at trying to do things that I know I'm not good at. So like I love electronic music, but I have no idea how to produce it. So I've started dabbling and bringing some like electronic music ideas into my songs, but
there was some techno on the previous album, kind of like techno sounds, right?
But I wouldn't just release a techno song on an album, not because I necessarily think people wouldn't like it, but because I know that I'm not that good. So the same way, like I know I don't know how to play authentic gypsy jazz. I feel like throwing in a cheap lick or like a little section would be satisfying in a very shallow way. Mm. But if I go through life appreciating it, I might, by the time I'm old, be able to convincingly do like a 15-second section, or I'll be inspired by it in a like more subtle way.
Mm. That's maybe enough, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I won't keep you longer from going to see some architecture here in Belgium. Thanks, Pliny, for your time.
Thank you.
And the listeners, thanks for listening.